Hello, everybody, and welcome back to my podcast here. I'm here with my two dogs, Pancake and Noodle, and they're both pretty much tuckered out. But I've also got a special guest. My cat is making an appearance. Her name is Mia, and she usually doesn't like to be in the same room as me, so I'm just going to let this one, play itself out, and hopefully now she's actually coming around to liking me, so we'll see. Now, I know in my past few podcasts, I've usually talked about, talked about video games or TV series, or maybe I would read a story that I found off of Reddit, just as like a spooky story. But given the current climate and things, what's going on in our nation, the current civil rights movement, it has actually kind of hit me a little personally. So I am a history teacher, and one of the things I've learned in my studies here is that the history that we teach in schools is very, at best, it's misleading. At the worst, it's a blatant lie. A lot of the history we teach is very biased towards the white individuals that make up our country. It's very whitewashed. We tend to glorify people that and make them into almost flawless individuals, when in fact they are very flawed. Great example is Woodrow Wilson, often regarded as one of our best presidents. He's actually, a lot of his policies and everything actually were very racist. He was one of the few, presidents who he claimed to be an isolationist, keeping America out of things, keeping America to itself. But in fact, he was the he invaded Mexico something like 5 times, and was involved in a lot of democratic coups in other countries in Central America there. So, I mean, there were a lot of things that he did that weren't exactly perfect, but a lot of people see him as, the ultimate president, one of the best presidents we've had. So, and then another example is somebody like Helen Keller, who many people are taught about her early life and how she struggled to read, struggled to, communicate. And then her caretaker came in, stepped in, and was able to teach her these things. And that's usually where the story ends. And that's because nobody wants to talk about the fact that, Helen Keller actually grew up and went to college, became very successful, and was a very adamant socialist. She stood up and was constantly speaking out for the rights of everybody, and a lot of the civil rights and oppression going on in our country. And she was very much a diehard socialist, and admitted to it herself. So, because socialism is such a frowned upon ideology in this country, nobody ever really talks about that. So, given all this stuff and given my passion for history, I'm decided to change things up a bit with this podcast. And rather than it just being an entertaining, storytelling kind of thing, I'm just going to tell you some of the things that, I've learned. And a lot of these, stemmed from one of the first books I read to start changing my mind about history, which was called Lies My Teacher Told Me by James Lowen. Wonderful, wonderful author. And he does a great job of presenting the material that we all know in a very new light. And he doesn't completely say that like everything we're taught is wrong, but presents things with sources and everything to show that what we are taught is not necessarily how things were. And it's not always a complete lie, but it seems more like an omission of the truth, or a lot of conjectures, a lot of assumptions or things added into our textbooks that aren't really accurate. And I'm just going to touch on today. I wanted to talk about one of my current favorite subjects, and that's actually Christopher Columbus. And, one of the reasons why I started to look into him a lot more is because of the fact that, everybody seems to be getting upset about us tearing down the Columbus statues around our country, but in reality, my question to you before we actually start this lesson, before we start a discussion here today, my question to you is, why do you want these statues up? What does a statue teach you? And why do you use a statue to learn your history? So keep these kind of things in mind, because In my opinion, statues have a place inside of museums, for instance, but in a public atmosphere, statues of individuals can sometimes be a very poor indication of what our country holds dear and the kind of people that we want to memorialize and idolize in our country. So, I implore you to approach this with an open mind and with the idea of, you know, why do we have these statues of people in our country? And in particular, why do we have statues of Christopher Columbus in our country? So welcome back. I just want to start off, you know, as I said before, we're going to be talking about Christopher Columbus. And let's start off with just talking about the very beginning of Christopher Columbus's story as we're taught in textbooks. We're told that he's an Italian explorer. Okay, that much is true. We're told that he reached out to many different monarchs and wanting to asking them for a few ships to explore because he had this brilliant idea that he could reach the Indies by going west instead of following the normal trade route. We're told that everybody had turned him down and he was down on his luck and broke, poor, and had actually given up hope on all this. This isn't really true though. In fact, he asked a few monarchs, but he wasn't down on his luck. He wasn't completely broke. And it's unlikely that he actually had to ask the Spanish queen twice in order to get the approval to sail the ship. So, they were told that they had that the Spanish gave him three ships, and they were very poor, kind of rundown ships. And this isn't true either. I mean, these are basically Armada type of ships. They were the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria were actually rather large ships, and they needed this because they felt that they were actually, if this journey worked out, they wanted to be able to bring back a lot of the material. So this is unfortunate though, because this kind of splits our American history up into a few things. This American history, actually, we're taught that there's basically two periods of American history, and it's the pre-Columbus time period. And that's where, anytime you talk about the Americas before Columbus sails there, it's typically failed ventures by, the Vikings or some others. And that's not always true, actually. In some cases, some of the Scandinavian people were still on American soil by the time that Columbus actually sailed out. But we've got the pre-Columbus period and we got the post-Columbus period. In pre-Columbus period, you talk about the people who are living in the Americas, the natives there, and they're described as savages. They're described as uncivilized, and that's not true either. And we'll get into that in a future lesson, because that's a whole different topic that we need to touch on. But those are the kind of things that we use to describe like the pre-Columbus Americas. And I just present to you this idea. So we all know at this point that Columbus wasn't really the first one to discover the Americas. We're told about the Scandinavians. We're told about, many other explorers that had actually come before him and probably hit touchdown somewhere in the Americas. But so rather than him being the first one to discover America, we can kind of say that he's the last one to discover America. He's the last person to be credited with discovering America. After that, everybody was just explorers to America. They came and they helped settle, for lack of a better word, America, which is also a bad word to use when we're talking about them, by the way, because they didn't really. They didn't really find America. They didn't really settle, America. They came and they took some land. But let's talk about why was this voyage granted permission to go, and why is this one considered the last real discovery? And it's mostly because of what came after the voyage, after this trip that Columbus made. So people think that he made this trip because they needed new trade routes. They say that a lot, you know, during this time, they were previously using the Marco Polo trade routes, you know, throughout. And after the Crusades, when the Turks kind of took over the area where the trade route went through, you know, there's a lot of textbooks will tell you that the trade routes were closed to Europeans. And this simply isn't true. Why would the Turks close a trade route to people? Why would they not allow Europeans to come through? That is a blatant money opportunity there. But why would our textbooks tell us that? Well, let's think about what kind of, you know, religions might make this make up the Turks, the Turkish individuals, you know, the Turkish people and the other people in this area. You know, it tends to be the Islamic or the Muslim individuals, you know, that religion's there. Well, why would America in America's textbook want to exclude this detail? Let's think about some of just more recent history with the Muslim community there. We've got 9/11 happened, you know, 9/11 where our World Trade Centers were attacked, and you know, many American civilians lost their life in that tragic attack. So And that's just one example. I mean, we've never really, being a country that's founded on Christianity, and despite our claim that we have this religious freedom, there's always been kind of a disdain and a hatred for the Muslim religion. So it obviously makes sense that, you know, these Muslim individuals take over this land that had the trade route going through it, and all of a sudden we're looking for new trade routes, we're going to point it to it being their fault. But what if, instead of it being their fault, what if the Spanish are the ones that need a new trade route? What if the English are the ones who need a new trade route? The Italians need a new trade route. And it wasn't because of the Muslims, but rather because of one of their own neighbors right there. So the Portuguese had actually founded a new trade route that went all the way around the coast, the tip of Africa, to get up there. And they actually sent a small fleet to the Persian Gulf and some of the other smaller waterways that touch up on the trade route that was previously used. And they would actually prevent Europeans from going through there with high taxes, high costs, all of that. You know, they would find ways to prevent other Europeans from using the trade route, and they would keep it to themselves. Now, I'm sure you're wondering, okay, well, that's one person. You know, that's one country that you're claiming does this versus our textbooks have always said this. But during this time period, many European countries that were very Christian, you know, predominantly Christian, they were actually known for torturing, for discriminating against Muslims and Jewish individuals. But during the same exact time, the Turkish land, the land that we're previously told was closed off to Europeans, there was well-sourced, you know, well-cited sources that tell us that they had practices set up to allow for the Christians to freely worship their God. You know, so I mean, for Christians and for Jewish individuals to freely worship their God there. So it's clear that the Europeans were actually the ones that were more oppressive than what the Turkish individuals, especially when it comes to the religious side of things. And then, as I mentioned before, why are they closing it off when they can make money off the people going through there, through, you know, their marketplaces and everything like that? So they claim, you know, that this trade route was closed. But they also tell us that the Renaissance period is to blame for the exploration west. They tell us that, you know, these individuals in Europe, these Europeans, they grew more curious, is actually the exact wording in many textbooks found in classrooms today. But how do we know that? How can we actually measure the level of curiosity in that period then, and compare it to other you know countries in Europe at the time? Also, that just doesn't make sense. That's something that's added in there just to make it sound fancy. They also, you know, make the claim that in the Renaissance period here, Europe was at its strongest, you know, and there was a largest population and their power. They were one of the richer countries or richer areas of the world. But you got to look at the time period here. We're talking about around the 1500s, right? Shortly before the 1500s. Well, if you know the history of Europe right around this time, they're actually coming off of one of the worst plagues in history with the bubonic plague. They were actually poorer and smaller population size than they ever have been before. And that is because of this plague. So rather than having, you know, not enough land for the Europeans or, just all this excess money, they want to find new ways to spend it. This wasn't the case. In fact, because of how poor they were and how small they were, a lot of people believe that they knew exactly why they were going this way. And they knew that there wasn't an actual trade route through here, but they were hoping, they had heard tales of gold in this area. And so that they were coming over here to try to find the gold to help make themselves a little bit richer. So Columbus gets this approval to sail, right? Now, so now let's think about why again, let's go back to this. Why would they actually care to use these lies as like of a trade route of, the Muslims? What's the purpose of all of these? Well, let's think about some of the things that came from, Columbus's exploration. So they come over here, they find all these new metals, they find new gold, and a bunch of different types of minerals, everything that they do not have over in Europe. And what do they use these for? During this time, there's actually a rather large military innovation going on. Military, you know, that they're able to design new weapons and equipment, everything. So, they would come to these islands in the Central America and the West Indies there, and they would use the gold and the iron and everything else that they're finding there to help build these new weapons. Well, why is this excluded from our textbooks? Could it be because this is considered an arms race, and it's something that we don't necessarily want to think that our country currently sides with? It's funny though that while it's okay for us to condemn the arms race that was going on then, you know, this rise of military powers in the European countries, but we currently have an arms race going on right now. So right now, the U.S. kind of polices the other countries, and we're able to tell other countries, you know, are you allowed to have nuclear weapons or not? But meanwhile, we've got one of the largest nuclear weapon stockpiles in the world. Actually, we do have the largest by far of nuclear weapons. So, you know, it'd be kind of hypocritical if our textbooks spoke out on this military innovation, especially with what they use the military innovations for. The colonials using it as selling to the Native Americans in exchange for different goods. The U.S. in the case of the European countries before we started colonizing the Americas, the Spanish were building their armada and everything. So this military innovation is not really talked about all too much. And what else came from these? Well, if you want to go a little bit long term, you know, especially with the colonies that were set up in the Americas, you started to have this idea of bureaucracy. And I know that nowadays bureaucracy has a very kind of a negative connotation. You know, everybody points to bureaucracy as the reason why companies and everything are very inefficient. But if you think about it, the core concept of bureaucracy allows for people to be able to control their businesses and control where their money is coming from far distances, from really far away. So this idea of bureaucracy is actually one of the ideas why one of the drivers, one of the factors behind these explorations west. You know, people are starting to realize, hey, if I set this up right, I'll be able to run a business from afar and not actually have to go there. So, you know, a lot of these explorations had the idea of bureaucracy behind them. But that wasn't it. There's also an ideological or theological kind of standpoint, if you may. And that's the idea, the shift in mentality that it is okay for individuals of a country to control individuals of another area that they deem as lesser or inferior. And this is a pathway to salvation if they did it right. So let's think about it. Let's think about like missionary trips and stuff in general. You know, all these people escaping religious persecution, they come over here and they would begin to tell these natives in both the West Indies, Central America, and up in North America there, they would start telling them that, hey, you have to believe our religion, but if you don't, we're gonna rape your women, we're going to kill you, kill your children, take the prisoner, we're gonna force you to do slave labor for us. And so it was this idea of, you know, they were okay with saying that stuff because in their minds, they're converting people to this religion, this right religion with their God. And so, you know, a lot of these countries thought, well, hey, if I can get out there and I could spread my religion before these other countries will, then I'm going to bring glory to my country. And therefore, it'll boost my, you know, it'll boost my reputation, I guess, in the eyes of God, you know. So this ideological shift is one of the big factors that drove them out there as well. But these factors are not really talked about so much. We're told that the only factor of Columbus really going to sailing west is to find that new trade route between Europe and the Indies, you know, Europe and India, and Asia in general there. And these other factors are just left out. And this is just wrong because, you know, these factors aren't inherently bad, but they give a lot more context and give a lot better explanation as to what happened. We all know that Columbus was not the first one to touch down in America. We all know that there is, because of this, because of the fact that he was not the first one to touch down, there's no way that you can convince students, you convince people these days that that Columbus did not know that he was probably going to hit some sort of land between here and India, between here and the Asia. So there had to have been another motive for going the way that he went. And these factors kind of explain that, you know, this idea of, okay, if we get the new metal, we're going to have a better military. If we could actually set up businesses over here and run them from afar, from back in Spain. And also just that we can bring glory and salvation to our country. And these factors are, you know, some of the big reasons they travel, but we don't know that. Now, I'm going to get into this a little bit more, but in a later podcast, I'm going to leave this here for now, you know, but the one thing I want you to keep in mind here is, you know, we're going to keep talking about Columbus, but I just want you to think about it and look it up if you have to, but what are the two national holidays here in the United States that are named after individuals? There's only two of them that we celebrate as national holidays. And tell me why one of them makes a lot of sense, but the other one makes little to no sense given his history with the United States and given, you know, the new information that we have about him. Why do we still celebrate this as a national holiday? So, I mean, I hope you liked this. I hope this is just a little bit of a lesson for you. You know, I'm hoping to do a little bit more of these, get a little bit more comfortable talking about these. I know this is the first one. It was a little awkward. But I encourage you, you know, if you like the things you're hearing, if some of it interests you, you know, definitely look into buying the book Lies My Teacher Told Me. There's a couple other books I'm currently in the process of reading as well. And, you know, they are very interesting to me too, especially with current events. One of them is called An Indigenous People's History of the United States. It's all about the history of the United States from the eyes of the Native Americans. And I haven't quite started that one yet, but it's on my list to start next. And the other one's called The New Jim Crow. And it talks about how, you know, even though we had the Jim Crow laws abolished and made illegal, but there was something else that came up to suppress the rights of African Americans. And this is the incarceration laws, the incarceration policies that were pushed and that are currently being implemented in our country. and how those incarceration policies are actually just as bad, if not worse, because they actually come off as a very morally sound policy for, you know, the police and individuals to follow. So I encourage you to, you know, look into both those books to see why people are currently protesting and why we are pushing for a defund the police movement or a police reformation movement. You know, these are the reasons that people are getting upset, and these are the reasons, this is the time we're living in where we need support from, you know, the rest of the country. Otherwise, the individuals who have been suppressed and oppressed for many decades now are never going to be experiencing the same right. You know, they're not going to be experiencing a life without discrimination, and they're not experiencing the same freedoms that the rest of us have. And it's heartbreaking. It really is, because, you know, that's what our country is founded on, essentially. You know, we're founded on this freedom of all. And I know that wasn't necessarily instituted in the very beginning with the Constitution or anything, but, you know, that principle, that idea was still there. It was just not the right time period for it. And, you know, I don't agree with everything our founding fathers did, but as people mentioned, like they set up a pretty good backbone on how to have such a wonderful country. And I truly believe that a lot of us are starting to lose sight of that, and a lot of us are starting to fade away from that. And I'm not saying that I'm perfect by any means in this realm, but, you know, I'm learning and growing as a person each day as I'm reading more and more about you know, the discrimination policies and discriminatory acts that go on in our country. That's why I decided to start this podcast up again, and to actually try to talk to other individuals and, you know, educate them, because I know that's not always how things go. It's usually a very heated discussion, and very, very, you know, you're either completely for it or completely against it. And I know there could be some gray area and some people who are just, you know, haven't been educated in that realm. And that's, as a teacher, you know, that's what I want to do with individuals. So, hope you enjoyed it. And, you know, if you'd like to, if you want to leave a message, if you want to leave your thoughts, by any means, do whatever you can on the platform that you're listening to this. I'll try to keep in touch. I'll try to, you know, follow up and see if there's any comments or whatever. If you have a voice message you'd like me to include on the next one, feel free to, you know, send it to me via the, you know, the platform that you're using to listen. And I would be more than happy to include it in the next podcast. So thank you again. And, you know, I hope you guys have a great week. I'll try to have this be a common Friday thing for me. So be on the lookout for next week. Next week, we'll continue talking about Columbus a little bit and start getting into, you know, some of the colonization of America as well. And with that, Pancake Noodle Mia and I are signing off. Have a good weekend.